Pshat and read Tractatus and Laws. CTE is also a part of this research. We have CTE in 2015 and 2016 done some investigation in what is happening in our country around the use of gender-based violence. And we are really happy that at this time where there's a high rate of gender-based violence in the country, we have a space to discuss the three reports and also be able to channel the recommendations that came out of the report to deal with the issue of gender-based violence. We all know that the patriarchy norms continue and the attitudes continue to be used in our country, to be practically practiced in the country, to ensure that the issue of gender-based violence is increasing. We have, as a country, adopted a very different legislation that addressed the issue of gender-based violence, but practically it's different with all the legislation that we have as a country. And also as a country, we have adopted different programs. The 365 days, which is one of the reports that are going to be presented, what will be done as a country. All sorts of programs that we put in place, the Victim Charter, to the Russian Club, the NPA Soccer Unit. But despite of all those programs, gender-based violence in the country is increasing. So clearly, there's something that we need to do differently as a country. And I hope that this platform that you provide at Jefferson today will be able to come up with some clear recommendations where to from now. How do we be able to advise the necessary people that could take the process and ensure that we come up with a clear strategy as a country? It can't be the one person's responsibility. All of us, we must work together to deal with the issue of gender-based violence. As the Commission for Gender Equality, we had inner action on Monday with key stakeholders in the country, but we were discussing the one human rights body. The platform was meant for that, but the issue of gender-based violence suffered. And the way it suffers, really, it shows that there's an agency where people say, representing how they're being abused, especially in the retail center, labor checkers, shop rights, all that, giving examples, practical examples of what happened to our people, working overtime up to 10 o'clock, and they're not even given a transport. They are being abused, killed. They just keep quiet as if nothing there. Private sector just keep quiet as if nothing has happened. So all of us, we have a responsibility to deal with the issue of gender-based violence. We are going to present three reports as the Commission for Gender Equality today. One is assessing the departmental response, especially social development, talking to social development, speaking to correctional service department on the victim charter. The title is Sheep Without a Captain. That's how we titled our report. the second one is speaking, assessing the response of department of the Justice Department, the Constitutional Development, and NPA as well as police on the victim's charter, which we named this is a struggle to meet the end of justice for our victims in the country. And the last report will then speak, painting, assessing programs to combat gender-based violence in the country. And two of these reports, two of these reports are 2015, but we believe that the outcome of the research is applicable and will be able, based on this information that we have collected as Commission for Gender Equality, use it to paint and to plan the way forward. I'm going to give over, I'm not sure if CEO or the Tabo as the head of research to present these reports.
time I'm going to be a spectator in the Gentlemen.
Okay, good morning, all members. Okay, I'll start with the two reports that came from the previous financial year, 2015-2016, because the next report is 2016-2017, so they come from two financial years. So these are the three reports as our acting chair has indicated. And the first two, we decided to start with the first two that belong to the previous financial year, and then we will report the next, the current, the most recent one last. This report, first one, named Painting Over Old Cracks. It assessed the programs that were, at the time when we did the study, the programs that were currently in place by relevant ministries to deal with gender-based violence. We wanted to look at them and see what was currently in place and what was being done to deal with gender-based violence. This is just a brief outline of the study. Of the content of this particular presentation, we'll just do background of the study, the objectives of the study, and then look at some of the initiatives that were in place, how we carried out the study, and overview of the findings and conclusions and recommendations. This report was the third report. CGE has been doing a number of studies as part of its focus on gender-based violence. Over the last number of years, CGE has focused on gender-based violence, and then we conducted a number of studies. I'm sure members would know we've launched quite a number of studies on GBV, on the 365-day program, on the Council on Gender-Based Violence. So there's a lot of studies that we have done on gender-based violence, and this was just to see what was going on at the time, especially after the GBV studies. We did two studies on the GBV, or on the Council on Gender-Based Violence, and then afterwards, when the council became non-functional, we wanted to see what was happening afterwards. So this study was monitoring those initiatives and the programs of state entities at national and provincial level, because some of the programs at national level have been cascaded downwards or were meant to be implemented even at provincial level. And we did this given the high, as our acting chair said, that there were persisting high levels of gender-based violence and violence against women in the country. That's how. What inspired us to do this and to see what kind of interagency collaborative strategies and programs were in place, and we wanted to assess the effectiveness of these studies. We wanted to identify the strategies, programs, and activities in place to combat gender-based violence, to assess the coordination and implementation of such strategies, and narratives across the different provinces in terms of dealing with gender-based violence, and we focused on the work of the as members would we will indicate at the later stage. The Department of Social Development has become central and critical in the programs, government programs on GBV, after the council seemed to become non-functional. So informally, the Department of Social Development has become a central institution. And we wanted to examine the achievements and challenges that were being experienced by government department in implementing these strategies and programs. also the progress that has been achieved so far at that stage in terms of developing the national strategic plan of action. These were the, at the time we did the studies, as I said earlier, this was a study that was done in the 2015-16 financial year. So at the time, these were the initiatives that were in place at national level. The 365-day plan of action, which was based on the 2006 Kopanon Declaration. We looked at that program at the time, and we identified some structural issues and problems that affected its implementation, as well as operational programs on the ground. We looked at both broader structural issues as well as operational or program matters on the ground of the in terms of that initiative, and we released reports that were lodged to Parliament. We also, as I said, we looked at the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. Also, we lodged a report with Parliament regarding our findings. And under that council, under the GBV Council, as we called it in short, a number of initiatives were supposed to be done to deal with gender-based violence. For instance, as the 365-day program of action was coming to an end, it had a five-year cycle. The council was supposed to review that program because we, as CGE, we were expecting that once the program came to an end, the 365-day program, after its first five-year cycle, we were hoping that government would review it and see some of the problems that we identified in our studies and hopefully renew it or at least establish a new five-year cycle to continue, because we believe that the 365-day plan of action had sound program objectives that we believe should have been reviewed re-established. It had other programs called Bigelam Danzi, the root causes study, which was done or at least carried out under the direction of the interministerial committee. The council was supposed to develop a plan of action, a business plan of action for itself, as well as develop a national strategic plan on gender-based violence. These are some of the issues that were supposed to be carried out under the leadership of the council. But as I will say later, some of these initiatives disappeared as the council also became inactive, or at least lost its direction as far as we could tell. So the current study, as I said, looked at what happened after the council seemed to disappear. What were the programs that were in place? We wanted to see if government departments continue to focus on programs dealing with gender-based violence after the council almost disappeared. Just briefly on the method, we basically spoke as part of the study. We spoke to a number of stakeholders, critical stakeholders, primarily from the Department of Social Development, because that became the key institution. So we had to get an insight from them in terms of what was being done, and we also conducted focus group discussions. Basically, we held dialogues with stakeholders at provincial level, and my colleague Dia Keteng was part of those stakeholder discussions in the four provinces. We chose these provinces because they were affected by gender-based violence. They reported high levels of gender-based violence, some of them. So we chose the four provinces. Due to lack of resources, CGE could not choose all nine provinces, so we had to prioritize some provinces where the issues of gender-based violence and violence against women were prevalent. And some of the constraints, just briefly, we obviously came across some difficulties doing the study. Some of the officials that we had to talk to were reluctant to provide information. Some of the information was sensitive. We acknowledge that, and officials were in most cases unwilling to provide the information. And one of the constraints that we felt we should bring to the attention of the committee was the uncertainty and the legal status of the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. Even to this day, we don't know what the status of the council is. It has not been formally abolished. We have not received any formal statement from government as to whether the council no longer exists. When it was established, it was a formal announcement by the Office of the Deputy President at the time in 2011. So we were hoping that if the council was seen to be no longer useful, a formal announcement would be made, and that another structure would be put in its place, because we still believe that there needs to be a national structure that coordinates government programs across the country. That's what the GBV Council was supposed to do. Once it was abolished, another structure had to be put in place. And as I said earlier, the Department of Social Development seems to have taken over the role without a formal announcement. And we believe that there's a limitation in that, because the GBV Council was supposed to be a multi-stakeholder structure, including civil society and other role players. The DSD is not such a structure. The department, it's a government department. It doesn't have it doesn't have stakeholders like civil society and so on and so on. So if the DSD has to replace the council, it won't be ideally the same structure. It won't be able to play the same role. But as I say, no announcement has been made, and we feel that that's a limitation on our part in terms of trying to explore some of the problems facing the implementation of government programs and strategies to deal with gender-based violence across the country. This is the overview of the findings that we came across. Our report is fairly detailed, so this is a sort of high-level overview of some of the findings that we felt were critical and we need to bring to the attention of the members of this committee. And as I've already hinted at this, we found that there was a vacuum that was created in terms of national coordination of the country's strategies and programs to deal with gender-based violence. And this happened just at the time when the severity of gender-based violence seems to be increasing. For such a structure and such a vacuum to occur, an institutional vacuum, at a time when gender-based violence was increasing across the country, we felt that was unfortunate. The demise of the council after May 2014 election, that's where we felt the demise of the council became a reality. We felt that after the 2014 elections in May, the national elections, the council was almost sidelined. And this created a vacuum at national level. As we said already, the reasons for the, we can speculate, but the reasons for the demise of the council were not clarified. The Department of Social Development announced previously, it's a mistake, there should be the Women's Ministry. It wasn't the DSP. It was the Women's Ministry that made the announcement that the council needed to be reviewed after the 2014 elections. As the members would remember, we had a new minister who took over. And after that, the relationship between the council and the Department of Women changed drastically. And there was an announcement that the council would be reviewed, but without clear reasoning as to why, what was wrong with it. We knew what was wrong with it because our report detailed some of the difficulties with the council, and some of those difficulties included the relationship between the council itself and the ministry under the previous minister for women. So this meant that the country, in our view, the country no longer had a national multi-stakeholder institution to fulfill the function as per the CEDAW recommendation, because the council was established under CEDAW recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we felt that if it had to be, it was a fulfillment of international obligations. So if it had to be abolished, we felt that an official announcement had to be made, preferably from the president's office, because that's where it was established. And that wasn't done. And as I say, its demise meant that the country no longer had that national multi-stakeholder institution to fulfill the CEDAW recommendations during the 967th and 968th session. That's where the recommendations were made. And as a result of that, the DSD came to fill that vacuum and became in practice, the coordinating structure driving national strategies, programs, and activities. In the absence of the national coordinating structure, the DSD started spearheading and driving coordination of national programs and strategies for combating gender-based violence. And the role of the DST, as I said already, I've already said this, it was never formally announced, although informally it seems to have been accepted at government level at least. It seems to have been accepted, and it is currently, the situation is currently the DST is leading national programs. But as we said, this has created confusion and lack of direction and certainty among stakeholders, because there are some stakeholders that believe that the council should be revived and that the DSD could not occupy the same position, as it's not the same in terms of its composition. So this lack of certainty as to the future of the council and the fact that the DSD has informally taken over the role of the council, that has created confusion and fragmentation in terms of approaches by various stakeholders. And this has generated some problems, as we will see in the next few slides. There was at the time also an interministerial committee that whose role was to oversee the implementation of these integrated programs of action. And this was drawn up by the DSD. And the Interministerial Council was chaired by the DSD. So these are the different departments that were part of the Interministerial Committee. Department of Correctional Services, SAPS, Department of Women, NPA, and Department of Justice, these were part of the DSD. So they were critical departments in terms of dealing with, or at least national programs on gender-based violence. And the challenges that we found, I've already mentioned that the DSD's role has not been formally announced as a coordinating body. This is what we found. It's preventing other departments from buying into the DSD. There's a territorial rivalry between several departments. Many of them do not want to take the DSD as the leading structure. They refuse to cooperate with the DSD because some of them see it. I don't know if I could put it this way. Some ministers don't want to be seen to be reporting to another minister. So they are equal in status. So the DSD has been able to draw up some programs, and when we look and examine those programs, some of those programs expect and demand the cooperation of other departments, like Department of Justice, Department of Police, NPA. But in terms of coordinating and getting those departments to work together under the leadership of the DSD, that has become a problem. Mm-hmm. So if the DSD's programs are dependent on the cooperation of other departments, mm-hmm. and those other departments are not willing to accept the authority and leadership of the DSD, mm-hmm. then it becomes a problem. It leads to fragmentation. Each department wants to do its own thing, and there is no coordinating body. And that has also, that's not just at national level. That's what we call horizontal coordination amongst equal ministries. There's also the problem of vertical coordination, coordinating the work of the DSC, of dealing with gender-based violence from national level to provincial level. We see the same problems at provincial level. There are provincial departments that are not that are not willing to cooperate with provincial departments of social development, DSD, at provincial level. Some of these departments are also feeling that this is another department like us. Why should we listen to them? So some of them would listen to the Premier's office rather than another department. So you find that in some cases like Northwest, I think, where the coordination of women of program dealing with DSD was based in the Premier's office, and they were and the departments were willing to listen. But in the Northwest, I think it was shifted back to the DSD, and it created problems. The Premier's office removed those responsibilities and shifted them back to the provincial Department of Social Development, and that created those relationship problems with the amongst other departments. So that created problems of poor coordination from national to provincial, because the DSD at national level was experiencing its own problems with other ministries and could not ensure that its leadership and the programs that it has put in place were being cascaded downward and being implemented by other departments at provincial level with proper and effective coordination. So, as I just said, that resulted in fragmentation and inconsistencies within and across the provinces, where different provinces were doing their own things. Lack of effective commitment towards the implementation of the DSD's integrated plan of action at national and provincial level. Another challenge was the incoherence and inconsistency in the membership of the victim empowerment structures compared to the national mechanism for coordinating GBV problems. Now, this illustrates the point I raised earlier, that if the DSD is not a multi-level, it's not a multi-stakeholder structure. At provincial level, you have multi-stakeholder structures, VEV, victim empowerment program. So a non-multi-stakeholder structure at national level trying to coordinate and impose its authority over structures at provincial. Victim empowerment programs included civil society organizations and so on and so on. So there was a disjuncture between a national, at the time when the council, the GBV council was still in place, at least its composition included civil society organizations at national level. And at provincial level, that multi-stakeholder component was there. So there was some sort of coordination. But after the council became inactive and the DSD taking over, a DSD is not a stakeholder, it's not a multi-stakeholder structure trying to impose its leadership and authority over civil society organizations on the ground. That also created problems. And in some cases, multi-stakeholder organizations or civil society organizations felt excluded. As you will understand, the DSD without multi-stakeholder representation would not be so open and willing to engage such multi-stakeholder structures on the ground. So that there were problems of communication. And some civil society organizations felt excluded from the work on the ground, even though most of them were identified as key stakeholders in government's white doors and green doors program. So, in other words, government communication and government public statements and engagement on officially identify civil society organizations as critical. But in terms of engaging with them on a regular basis, many of them felt excluded. Another challenge that we found was the absence of the national strategic plan, which was intended to bring together stakeholders and get input in terms of the country's national strategies toward dealing with gender-based violence. That did not exist. and that we felt was a major challenge for every department that was involved in programs to deal with gender-based violence. In terms of those were some of the structural problems we identified in some of the initiatives on the ground to deal with gender-based violence. There were also operational program-related issues that we picked up. For instance, one of the programs that were on that were ongoing at the time was the review of the 365-day program National Action Plan. As I said, it had come to an end and it had to be reviewed. The council had the National Council on Gender-Based Violence had commissioned a consultant to review it, and the findings were the review was completed and the findings were presented to the Department of Women. And we believe that after that nothing was done. We were expecting that the review would inform a review, or the review would inform another, maybe a decision for government to revitalize or revive the program after maybe for another 5-year cycle. That hasn't been done. There was another initiative called Know Your Epidemic, which was instituted under the Interministerial Committee. And it was intended to identify some of the key factors underlying gender-based violence, and not much came out of that. Same as the root causes study, which was also, I think it was instituted by the Interministerial Committee, under the council at the time. So most of these initiatives became almost were undermined by the decline of the GBV Council. And after that, the DSD introduced its own integrated program of action, which we believe is still in place. It's still driving some of the programs of the initiative of the DSD. But as I said, the DSD is finding it difficult to secure the commitment and cooperation of other ministries in implementing the plan. I mean, we analyzed the plan. The plan is largely sound. The problem is implementation and coordination and interagency cooperation. That's where the problem lies, and it's a structural problem. Under this DSD Integrated Plan of Action, IPOA, these are some of the programs that are in place currently. What's called the everyday heroes, which basically encourages ordinary members of the public to be involved in the fight against gender-based violence. The establishment of one-stop centers, the establishment of GV command centers. I think these were piloted initially in the Gauteng province. So they established these command centers in the different areas in the Gauteng province. And also initiatives to engage men and boys in the fight against gender-based violence. So these are some of the initiatives under the DSD. And these initiatives, as I said earlier, are dependent on the cooperation of other ministries, other stakeholders, and the ability of the DSD to secure that cooperation and commitment from other ministries. And as we said already, there are difficulties that we found regarding the DSD's ability to secure the cooperation of other ministers. Maybe, as we said, it's the nature of the DSD itself as a government department rather than as a multi-stakeholder institution that used to be the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. Maybe this committee could institute or initiate a dialogue with the DSD and the presidency just to see the situation that should prevail regarding the status of the GBV Council. At provincial level, we've been talking about issues at national level. So this is what we found at provincial level when we looked at operational activities on the ground. As I said, we held dialogues and stakeholder discussions at provincial level, and we found that many stakeholders at provincial level showed lack of confidence in some of the initiatives on the ground against gender-based violence. There was concern over lack of relevant expertise, for instance, in the SAPS to deal effectively with gender-based violence. Last week, we presented at the Portfolio Committee for Policing, and the same issues were raised regarding lack of skills and expertise mm-hmm. within the SAPS. This is the same thing we found in the study amongst stakeholders on the ground, who told us that they felt that the SAPS did not have the necessary skills to deal effectively with gender-based violence. And this has led to concerns and fears that in some cases victims of gender-based violence are being exposed to secondary victimization, which is one of the key areas that needed to be eliminated. For instance, under the Victims Charter Program, the inefficiency of sexual offences courts. These courts were established in the same financial year. They were re-established by the Department of Justice. But there were concerns of inefficiency due to bottlenecks mm-hmm. and leading to delays in finalization of cases. Some of the sexual offences courts had serious financial and resource limitations, and funding constraints affecting GBV programs were also raised by some of the stakeholders. Provinces like Eastern Cape were aware of some of the coordination challenges between DSD and provinces on the ground. Some of them were, especially in the Eastern Cape, were willing to accept the role of the DSD as the new coordinating structure. Yet, some of the province departments were reluctant to report to the DSD on the ground at provincial level. Some participants had started their own initiatives, especially in the Eastern Cape. They started their own provincial structure to coordinate all strategic programs on the ground to deal with gender-based violence. There were also concerns of program of fragmentation at provincial level, with department and institutional inconsistencies reflecting lack of coordination from national level. So this is the point I made earlier, that if there's lack of coordination at national level, that is replicated and reflected also at ground level, at provincial level, where implementation and service delivery takes place. And the stakeholders we spoke to also raised those concerns. We wanted to see whether what's done on the ground, what the provinces are doing on the ground, the provincial department, whether those activities were guided by national strategic programs and national policy frameworks. And we found that some of the stakeholders agreed with us that activities on the ground were not guided, or at least were not done in line with strategic programs at national level. So what it means is that national policy frameworks were being designed, but they were not being followed on the ground. And that's a major problem for us, because policy has to be set at national level and be implemented on the ground. So if that's not happening, then it means there's a disjuncture between policy and practice on the ground. There were enormous constraints that we found and challenges that the national effort to combat gender-based violence have encountered during the period of the study. This is the 2015-16 financial year. These are our conclusions. There were problems regarding national effort to combat gender-based violence. We faced constraints that we identified. There are structural challenges and impediments to the effective implementation of national strategies and programs to combat gender-based violence. There's continued institutional uncertainty over current national initiatives for coordinating the fight against this scared of gender-based violence, not only among key national ministries, but also at provincial level. Government and key players have failed to develop a national strategic plan, and this is one of the key structural constraints hindering the collective national effort to combat gender-based violence. And these are our recommendations. Our study recommended that national government take action, urgent action, to resolve the current institutional uncertainty that has resulted from the demise of the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. So we believe that if the council's demise or its gradual sidelining has created uncertainty, and in terms of the CEDAW recommendations, the country needs to have a structure, a multi-stakeholder structure that coordinates strategies and programs to deal with gender-based violence. A clear decision is, we recommend that a clear decision is made by a government regarding the national institution that will take over the role and responsibilities of the now defunct, it should be the now defunct, DSD. Basically, we are saying that a clear decision has to be made regarding the institution that takes over from the council. And at this stage, that institution is the DSD. The DSD in practice is playing that role. So we believe the government has to make a formal announcement in that regard. We recommend that government should take action steps to ensure that national strategic plan for combating gender-based violence is developed with the involvement of key stakeholders, including civil society organizations, to ensure sustainable implementation. Once the national strategic plan has been developed, it should be disseminated widely to all stakeholders in society, including government and civil society organizations. At this stage, there is no national strategic plan to deal with GBV. What we have is an IPOA under the DSD. Thanks. This is the end of the first report.
Thanks for the report that was actually shocking us. Any questions? I saw your hand up there. Then maybe there will be something that we have done as the portfolio committee, since we have had this report earlier, so as to discuss with the department. So now, to us, it's very short, because it seems as if we have not done what we are supposed to do. but we have managed to ask the Minister for the Council at the beginning of of our first meetings with the new department, which is the Women Ministry, because but anyway, I don't know what we have to do, because to me it seems as if as the portfolio committee we should request the meeting as soon as possible in the department and with the minister herself, so that we can discuss about this issue, because the escalating of the killings of women and the gender-based violence for now, and we have seen that even with the police, they don't have a plan to deal with these matters, together with the Department of Justice, and this ministry remains quiet on the issues of gender-based violence, and even the ministry itself, when you ask about these issues of what is happening now, seems as if the minister is in the bush. I would say that because we don't even know exactly what the department responds to the issues of what is happening now in the community. So to me, thanks very much for the CGE to have this report, because it has eye-opening us as the portfolio committee that the need of this council is very important, and I don't know what to say, but we have to ask the minister now with all these things that have been reported here to get to know deep on what happened. And even if the president has not even announced the abolition of these things, that is why we are having the problem when it comes to the reports, when those reports have been submitted to the CSW, because we don't have the information that is supposed to be brought to the portfolio committee. We only have about the CSW while the report has to be submitted to the New York, to the UN. But I'm glad that we have this information for now. So it seems as if we have to make sure that we meet with the department as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you from the commissioners, and thank you from the researcher for the outlining of the report. Chairperson, we really have a major problem. When the national department has no strategic plan, there can't be any direction. Number two, when there's no leadership, take for instance what is happening in the Eastern Cape, the people decide to lead themselves. Mm-hmm. They formed their own structures. Now that's a major failure from us at national level, which is a very poor show for the citizens out there, especially in what is happening. The escalation of the violence against women is appalling. Mm-hmm. Social development. I cannot see social development leading this. They themselves have got their major challenges within social development. For the minister to not review the continuation of the council so that the programs that are there and those that still have to be done, it's a major, major, major flaw. Because as it is, there is no direction. I cannot see even the Department of Social Development accepting this money to continue doing it. They should not have even done it for them to create an inter-ministerial program within other ministers. That on its own was a disaster. This is why this program is not moving forward. So to me, we really, really have a problem. There are major structural problems, operational problems. chairperson, really the minister has to come and account to this portfolio committee, especially that information has been given to the minister, but nothing has been done. From this report, nothing has been done. So it definitely shows that there's just no will, if I may put it, there's no willingness within the ministry of wanting to make sure that we kept this gauge of gender-based violence. And it's getting worse as if people know that we have no direction, we have no direction. This is true, this is the beheading of this officership without a captain, really. You can have a picture. You can have a picture when the ship is moving in the sea. If it hits a stone, then it will try to change direction. We really, really are in trouble. Chairperson, we really can help to get the minister to come and the department to come and account. Thank you very much.
It's just to the members, it's just a pity because we can't get hold of them now. It would have been very good if we could have it now. Which means then it's August. But very soon in August. Nelly, please, not that. And the minister herself has to answer to this. Not the DG or herself. But you shake your head at me.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, dear Chair. I think the issues that are raised by the present DG Inc. are not new to us. Hence, I agree with him that they've already made a research on the council, the effectiveness of the council, and other research reports. We have read them. These are the very same challenges that you have raised even prior. And one of the issues, Chair, I think you have been consistent, especially your National Council for Gender-Based Violence, Chair. I think it has been a challenge, even just right from the formation. Because opposition parties were raising it, you know, sharply, so that there's no budget even allocated to that council. So the minister, when she came, instead of, you know, coming up with some strategies on how best can we move forward with regard to the institution itself, then she made it clear that no, this thing is not going to work. And unfortunately, Chair, with the approach that we want to take, that we must call the minister, we are not going to get it right.
So what do we do?
We took a resolution, a clear resolution, when we were doing the BRR, to say, because of this scourge of violence against women and children, we must call a summit of some kind. You must be a lead department. Meet with other portfolio committees that are relevant, your police, your justice, and your health, your social development that people are saying it's not assisting. Meet with them in parliament. Call the stakeholders, call relevant stakeholders that can be able to assist in this regard. Because we're not going to assist. That's what Ms. Machaki is saying. And the presenters are saying we don't have a national strategic plan to guide, you know. Even if we can have the council or whatever structure, but as long as we don't have a plan, generally we're not going anywhere. So we as the committees that are relevant, let's take it forward. We are not going to assist with the minister. You know deep down that you are not going to assist. Even if you can call ahead 20 times in this committee. So let's do our work as the portfolio committees, call that summit, engage with them, maybe even call the office of the deputy president. Because this council was directly, you know, under his office. Maybe call him, make sure that we call him so that he can be able to give us way forward in this regard. I was also telling Kashiro that we must also make a written question as a portfolio committee to the deputy president to ask him, where is this council because it was in your office. We are regarding it as a failure to his office, because speaking, that's a council is not functional chair. And on the other issue, I want to agree with all the recommendations that you have put forward.
Mm-hmm.
That these are the issues that we must actually recommend in our summit. I think you'll
mm-hmm.
be one of the stakeholders that we should call in the summit, that we should call in the probably in the third quarter in the list.
Mm-hmm.
And the IMC, your Interministerial Committee, I want to agree with you, I cover lunch. I think no one in this country wants to be led by DLD. It's very clear. Even in provinces, they want to be led by DLD. I don't know what is this wrong. I don't know what is this challenge in the DLD. So, but yes, if we want to take this matter serious, let's take it out of whatever department. Let's put it, you know, again, let's resubmit it again to the office of the deputy president, because it has power.
Mm-hmm.
There's more power in that office. I was just asking myself, well, where is this monitoring and evaluation?
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but I don't think it has power.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have chief. I was listening to the Power FM yesterday. They're talking about your implementation of your NDP. In relation to the minister planning and monitoring, or how is it going to make sure that you come up with the radical, you know, programs that will be able to address the NDP. So one was related to, you know, China and India, but saying that in China, the ministry itself is equivalent to the Chinese. It does have budget, it does have, you know, all the resources that it will need. So in South Africa, it's just equal to DSD.
Mm-hmm.
Then Minister Jeff can tell Minister what to do, because they are equivalent in terms of same level.
Yeah.
All of them are ministers accounting to the president.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to go to the deputy president or president.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you're going to assist. It's not functional actually with IMC. Where are they? They're killing each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, but you can't even hear any single minister from the IMC saying, I'm representing the IMC. You know, there's no one. Everyone is speaking at this corner, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're speaking there, even I haven't seen
I've
them.
Never heard one.
Yeah, Minister of Women is speaking at the corner, and all those ones, justice and constitutional development. So I just want to check, because I'm saying provincially, Eastern Cape has their own structure. What are the lessons that you have learned? Are there best practices in the Western Cape that you can be able to copy from them? And then in your which document are we dealing with now? The official from the Department of Women in the presidency were unwilling to be interviewed to offer assistance to officials.
Yes.
They are coming to us, not vice versa. They are coming to us. I think you must provide the names of those who want to keep information. Yes, this is our responsibility. They don't have those powers.
Why?
Why?
They still in the? If it's an office of the
No, the president is chief, the women president is officials from our department. So when we call them in the next quarter, they must account. Why?
I want to find out, how's the situation here? Are they operating within the presidency office? Or isn't it?
Yeah.
Women ministries within the
practice. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Are we still lost even 2017? The Department of Women in the Presidency. That's what I'm saying.
Unless, because if the case is playing their own basco, are they still there, or they are now a freestanding?
Don't check. Let me answer that.
Sorry.
Oh, it's not relating to that. Yes.
There are a lot of funny things happening in the Eastern Cape. That's why I'm pushing this.
Okay, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. What happened was that when we were conducting the study, the Eastern Cape, because of the challenges that they experience of the higher level of gender-based violence and violence against women, the legislature, different committees, but it was a large representation from the legislature, and they requested that they needed, they wanted guidance as to how to proceed to establish their own structure, and that they could lobby with all the relevant departments on how to come up with their own structure that will assist them, since now there's nothing, there's battle between provincial and national. Right now, they were still at their needs assessment and kind of process. So we are yet to hear from them, because they said that they will be working with the commission with maybe the lessons that we are learning from different areas on how to go forward. If you allow me, Chair, I also wanted to clarify on this issue again of the IMC. The IMC, when it was established within the National Council of Gender-Based Violence. It was, Dr. Rapo indicated on those the programs that the NCGBV was tasked with. One of the programs, it was to review the 365, because it had ended. So that they got funding from UNFPA and the 365 Days National Action Plan. It was reviewed and then finalized. But it was never disseminated. We got it from the UNFPA side. It was submitted to the Department of Women, but nothing was done about it. What has happened was that reviewed 365 days action plan, root causes study, know your epidemic, they were all conducted to inform the development of the national strategic framework of the country on gender-based violence. Know your epidemic study, it was finalized as well, and it was launched by the UNFPA now, because UNFPA as well, because they incurred lots of cost on that, they had to report again for them. It was launched. They have issued the reports, they are there. Nothing is still being done about them. Now, the root causes study, Parliament then developed that structure, IMC, which under the guiding, the guidelines that were establishing the NCGBV. It was a temporary structure that was established to develop the Know Your Epidemic, not Know Your Epidemic, but the root causes of gender-based violence in the country. And the result of the root causes of gender-based violence, it was one of the elements that were going to inform the national strategic framework. But instead of the root causes findings developing the national strategic framework, a developed integrated program of action. The IMC is chaired by the DSD. So the DSD is the coordinating body of this whole. So they developed a remember they were developed as a temporary structure to develop only to finalize the root causes study. But now they came up with a 5-year plan, which is now the ongoing integrated program of action, which is now being implemented and chaired by the DSD. So the ministers under IMC, they are supposed to be working together, providing budget where necessary, providing expertise where necessary. But now there's that in disjuncture, as Dr. Rabo indicated during the presentation. I just felt I needed to clarify on that IMC just did not come from the vacuum. It's actually a baby that was born within NCGBV.
Recommendation 19 for CEDAW committees were constantly
clarify on the reason why we call this painting over all cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And as Member Teke said, what we found is we have done study after study on gender-based violence. We started with the 365-day program. We did about 2 years of it, and we went to the GBV Council. We did two. We followed the GBV Council for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then we came into this. and we found the same old cracks, and we felt that, you know, this was, we were just painting over old cracks. The same fundamental problems have been there. There was a structure called the Interdepartmental Management Team, which was almost like the IMC. At the beginning, structures like the IMC are not new. They've been there before, and they have failed to work. So our study, we find that during that whole period, we found that the fight or programs against gender-based violence seem to come up the same problems all the time. They seem to hit the same structural problem, the same coordination problem, the same lack of funding, the same poor coordination. Even the old IDMT, Interdepartmental, it had the same problem, lack of cooperation amongst different departments. So it's the same, it's like the same old record replaying over and over and over. So that's why I think CGE, we have produced so many recommendations, we are now beginning to repeat the same recommendations.
Second
question, still on my last point, who are the officials who are supposed to give this information? I think you'll provide one. And then two, remember that you don't have enough budget. But yet in here, out here, producing one and the three. I think at a certain point, you must open this thing and make sure that government implements the resolution, the recommendations that we have came up with. And three, I just want to check the powers that you are having, because I don't think it's you who are supposed to be crybabies in terms of complaining about officials not giving you information. I think you have powers that you can every time you go there, the RCGE, we're not going to give them information. So use the powers that you have in terms of the constitution of this country. And the other thing, you know, there's a debate on, I saw it on HU, because the Auditor General Portfolio Committee on HU, they say AG is raising concerns year in, year out about the performance and non-performance of whatever entity. But it seems as if they're not taking that seriously. So the debate is all about why the recommendations are not binding. Why are the AG's recommendations are not like your public project? The same question I'm asking to you. Why the recommendations of the CGE are not binding? I think this is the matter that we should debate going forward. Because we're going to produce the research documents clear recommendations. Because this is just a clear recommendation that's going to assist this country going forward. But no one is willing to implement it. Just like the resolutions that you're having, you know, the policies that you're having, no one is ready to want to implement them. So I think this should be a debate going forward. What do we do in terms of recommendations that are brought forward by either Chapter 9 institutions? That might be your public protest. Chair, thanks so much.
I'm just saying that it's true that I want to concur with another thing that we need to meet with the Deputy President on this issue. Firstly, before we go to the minister or whatever, because we have seen that our minister is not even cooperating. That is why we had some of the officials not even wanted to cooperate with you. Because even the minister, when we talk about these issues, we find that even the working relationship between the minister and the official is not conducive. That is why the committee
say to the CGE, I don't know whether do you have any means of meeting with the deputy president on these issues. Have you ever reported these matters to him?
No, Chair, I'm just laughing because we are struggling to meet our own minister.
How much is that?
The deputy president is not our we try to have, I think we had a meeting one with her. She came with claims that our mandate has been given to her by the president and the deputy president, and we called for the workshop. We said we need a workshop with you and the CGB. That was the last time we never managed to get the meeting because we needed to workshop each other to so that out of the meeting we know who plays what role so that we complement each other instead of overlapping and also competition on the way. So we never even tried to go to the office of the deputy president on the matter. At least now we hope that the office of the support the institution supporting democracy can assist us. Because we now try to channel all our reports there so that they can call the relevant departments into place, but that's how far we can go.
I'm asking that because in the portfolio committee we have asked several times to the minister whether she has met with the CG. And even later, if you saw the minister, which can be seen moving with people who I know, you're not going to have a CG. As long as they want to keep him running against the CG thereafter, there's nothing wrong with that. So, can you leave here?
We're invited by other
ministers.
We were not invited.
Thank you, Chair. To add to this chairperson, the CGE has done a lot of work. There's a lot of reports and investigations that they've done. Now, when the department comes to report to us, they will tell us of 16 day activities and this is 5 days, and in fact, there's very little coordination. And I remember you mentioned that they must frequently meet CGE. Because a lot of things like that they are trying to do has already been done by CGE. But it has not happened. There's a lot that could have been done if the department was meeting frequently with CGE. And I'm sure there would be a lot of problems. I can find a few answers.
Members, I think really we have to tighten our belts because when you look at painting over old cracks, this time there are storms and the paint is going to be rubbed off. How do we control the drowning? Because it's the end of end results. So we have to call it. That's my feeling. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Correct me. Or we call her after going to deputy president. We're not even going to call chair. What do you say, Ma? I can see you standing somewhere.
maybe just in terms of advice and a way forward. Following on from what Ms. Tsetsia suggested, in order for Parliament to be effective, because the issue of a claim involves multiple stakeholders. So the idea of a summit is to have multiple committees take lead. The lessons learned from the engagement with the Portfolio Committee on Police last week, members within the police committee took most of the recommendations from the CG, and they will now consistently follow up. And the resolution was made that if there's a confernal meeting, and it can't just be done in a half a morning or one day, it has to be over more than that, with all the relevant committees, then it's easier, because then the issues of intersectoral collaboration makes better sense. I think the challenge would be if only the Portfolio Committee on Women only calls the Deputy President and only engages with the Minister. But again, it would be the issue of silos, whereas if we have all the relevant committees, and we've taken a tally there about seven, Portfolio Committee on Women, Police, Justice, Department of Social Development, Health, Basic Education, and then there's also the two select committees, with the issue around funding allocation, whether it's offices of the Premier, whether it's police, whether it's education. So the NCLP also have to get engaged. But the challenge around just the coordination of seven committees, when the different committees meet on different days. So I think the committee would need, and the chairperson and the work would need to discuss how is the engagement with House chairpersons and workery to look at within the third term, to get political buy-in from higher up, and to have the chairpersons agree that from an administrative side, how do we plan for summit in that regard? Because I think the key challenge, at least for now we've looked at the program, the great difficulty is having seven, even just getting three committees to sit together. So I think with the WIP and chairperson and the committee, if there's buy-in through House chairperson and chairs and work free to say, how do we lobby, and all committees then agree, even if we then plan it for the last week of oversight in August, September, then there's more time to engage and write letters to the relevant departments, ministries and stakeholders. I just think maybe that would be a better way, so that we can have all the stakeholders engage and hear on all the issues, as opposed to our committee trying on our own to engage with everyone in one city. So that would just be the advice from our side.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honourable Delu said something about wish you had said this earlier. I just from our side wanted to make a suggestion that once we lodge the report to Parliament, it should not end there. If we can find space to discuss as well as we now, because that will help us find a way forward as a process. Because if this was done before presentations by the DOW, we would have had this information and been in a position to question that. Another point that worries me a lot, I wasn't at the presentation with the police, but way back, the Eastern Cape had 250 million to do research, and one of the focus was to be on police taking statements, how to take statements from people. Now, in KZN, Umzi Mkhulu, 2 years ago, an old elderly woman was killed. CGE was monitoring that case. There, the murderer got 5 years or 5,000 days suspended for 5 years. When you try to find out why, it was the manner in which, okay, what the statements were taken. Now, had the CGE was okay, fine with that, in the sense that there was nothing that could be done because of the manner in which the statements were taken.
That is still a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, finish up.
So I'm thinking I was there, but there's so much that has been happening a long, long, long time ago, but it is still happening. Why is it happening? SAPS has been training the police on taking statements, but the police are still not able to take statements. Thank you.
Just to give you some info, last week we had a joint sitting. It was the police, it was Oakland, CGE, it was the police, Justice. And when I posed a question, because it was the brigadier and the whatever that was, my concern was those people are sitting far away from the point of operation. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like that. Mm-hmm. So really for them to come and say they're presenting a report, they don't know anything that is happening there. Mm-hmm. And of course they were not happy. Mm-hmm. And then it came to this point, the cases. I said the problem starts with your police at the station. Mm-hmm. Those police don't even know how to take the statements. And they pissed off if it's a women's case of abuse. I said some of your members have committed the same crime. What do you do? Well, they investigated and then suspended, and then what happens after that? Mm-hmm. I nearly spoke there. They come back, and then that is why they then start killing us as members of the community. They say that's why they are killing each other now in the police station. And then I asked that lady, she's with 5-star bracket, who are those people? Brigadier or more than that. Yeah. I thought I was using the wrong thing. I said to her, I said, you and your friend have been laughing when case studies were being tabled here. Are you that immune to pain? Then I said to the other one who was very nasty, what schedule are your people supposed to use when they actually sentence this people, when they take this to the court? Schedule one, I said, actually, you should be thrown out. Mm-hmm. You don't know your schedule. So it's things like that. That is where we lose. And now they are demanding to have the meeting with Tina, no, CGE, I just thought, time for this type of people. They are mute. They were laughing. Yes. So we said, no, we want the commissioners in the provinces. So we've got the big hole and we can't jump over it, which means we're still going to be killed. It's another class one, class two. The statistics are wrong.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Chair. I'm saying that, Chairperson, I fully agree with you that the sentiment that we need to meet with Honorable Lorik, MHP, or no obligation of us meeting with all these other portfolio committees, because we have met with the police and the portfolio committee, but maybe if we can meet together with all of us, although we have found out that there is so much ignorance around the issue of the Department of Police on the issues of gender-based violence. And they even said that some of the police station, when the visitors there, they don't even cooperate. They have not even participated to the reports that were supposed to be given to their own superiors. So that means there is a problem anyway in this country on the issues of the state of killing of women and children. So I don't know whether we are going to succeed in this, because even if we have a summit, if we don't come out with a resolution that will reduce this act of violence, then what are we going will be the purpose of meeting with them, when those people who are supposed to be the leading when it comes to the cases, they don't even know what to do about it. Because we have asked several questions about on that, and it seems as if they are unable even to answer those questions, because they don't know exactly what are they supposed to do. Because we have seen that the police, they don't even unable to write the affidavits. So what about the statements? No, that's a problem. And even the re-offending of those, because we even ask the question of the re-offenders, and you find that the police are trying to cover up their colleagues on the issues of their partners killing their partners using the guns, you know. But we find that there is a problem. That is why the chairperson of the portfolio committee on police said we need to come back and meet again by August as the portfolio committee of women and the police, because some of the reports that were there, they were as far as their 2015-16, but even though nothing has been done by the police to resolve some of the matters that have been that have been put forward to them to deal with. So I don't know, but we can able to talk with the chairperson, the chair of chairs, and the chief whip. But in Parliament, there's this issue of time. We don't have time to manage to about this thing. Because some of the portfolio committees are meeting on Tuesday, others on Wednesday. So it will depend to them, the whip, the chief whip, and the chair of chairs to make sure that all these committees are coming together. But we need the help of the secretary to do so, because it's very difficult in Parliament. Thank you.
We are covering that fact.
They should be.
There's no way they can be able to.
But that was her personal feeling, because
She's trying to indoctrinate us about her church, where the Hebrews and whatever, and the Jews. This is why I said I'm not going to be colonized. I've never been colonized. I've been oppressed. And actually, when it comes to that, I'm a Christian. So we push for a
In the budget we have and unfortunately you are not the CGE, but you are not invited,
yes.
And it was for the first time in the history of this committee, you know, specifically allocated a speaker to speak about CGE and all the activities. I was speaking to CGE, from a member of CGE, but it was, I didn't expect that at this time.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I'll start with the second report. Just in a nutshell, the reason why we called it Sheep Without Captain is because the Department of Justice, when the Victims Charter came into place, the Department of Justice was the lead department, supposed to lead and coordinate and make sure that all the other departments were committing the resources and the time and the planning to ensure that Victims Charter services were delivered, and the Department of Justice abandoned that role. So that's why we call it Chief. It will become clearer as we go ahead. These are just the outline of the study, what we looked at. I'll try and be fast and skip some of the items just to be fast. The study was done in 26, basically the 6 departments that are involved in the implementation of the Victims Charter, they are part of the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. So those 6 departments, we looked at them. This is the first year we took 3 departments each year, because we didn't have the resources to take all of them at once. So the first department were DSD, Department of Health, and Department of Correctional Services. Each one of them has a specific role to play in ensuring delivery of services to victims of crime. So we conducted this assessment between 2009 and 2012. And we wanted to assess those programs in terms of realize their programs, in terms of meeting the rights, the 7 rights that are contained in the Victims Charter. And the five-year national implementation plan. So there are rights that are specified, and each of the 6 departments has to play the relevant part in terms of meeting those rights. So yeah, these are the objectives. Just to review, what we wanted to do, as was indicated earlier, I think it's Member Teke who said that at one stage we have to stop with recommendations and ensure that action takes place. So this is exactly what we did in this study. Instead of doing another study, what we did was to go back and see, in terms of the recommendations we produced in the past, how have these departments responded? What actions did they take in relation to the recommendations we made for them to deal with the study? So we were reviewing action taken in the light of the CGE's recommendations. I'll just briefly, the Victims Charter, as members would know, was introduced in 2004, so it's been around for a long time. And the six departments are there. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, that was the key department. It actually conceptualized the program. The National Prosecution Authorities is one of them, the Department of Correctional Services, Department of Housing, and SAP, as I think the Women's Ministry should be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are critical departments that were part of this. And these are, just in a nutshell, these are the rights that the departments are supposed to realize. The right to be treated with fairness and with respect, dignity and privacy, the right to offer information, the right to receive information, the right to protection, the right to assistance, the right to compensation, and the right to restitution. So the Victims Charter is designed around ensuring that those rights of victims are realized by the different departments. So we, as I said, we looked at the different departments. The Department of Justice primarily was the lead department for the implementation of the Victims Charter, and the charter was intended to eliminate secondary victimization, to ensure that victims remain central to the criminal justice system, to clarify the services and the service standards that could be expected by and are afforded to victims whenever they come into contact with the criminal justice system and other associated structures, and to make provision for victims' recourse when standards are not met. So this is what the Victims Charter is supposed to do, to place the victims at the center of the justice system. As members would probably understand this, in the past, the criminal justice was organized around punishing the perpetrator and forgetting the victim. So in the past, the whole justice system was intended to put in place all the right skills, resources, and so on, to make sure that the perpetrator is arrested, prosecuted, and put behind bars. And there was, that level of resource was never directed towards the victim, because victims also get affected. So the Victims Charter was intended to put the victim in the center of the system. We also basically did the same in terms of talking to departments, approaching them, doing site visits. This was a proper field-based study. We visited a number of, in addition to talking to officials and interviewing officials at national level and provincial level, we visited the centers, the specific centers, the Thuthuzela care centers, correctional facilities, parole board. We spoke to parole chairpersons, the shelters funded by the DSD, and those kinds of structures where services are rendered to victims in line with the Victims Charter. And we looked at departmental plans, programs, and annual reports, and the number of constraints. Once again, we feel we need to bring these to the attention of the committee, because we do experience constraints and limitations in our studies. Once again, the willingness and availability of key officials in some provinces to be interviewed. Many of them were unwilling to be interviewed. which also limited the scope of our work. We also found that there's declining knowledge or limited knowledge of the victim's charter. Many officials resign, leave over time, and new ones are not familiarized with the charter. So there's a declining knowledge of the charter within government departments. And the fact that the Department of Justice has abandoned its role as a lead department, that also created limitations, because they know how the system was conceptualized, how it's supposed to operate at national and provincial level. So their involvement was critical, and they have abandoned that role. So we find that as a limitation. These are the centers that we visited under each department. As I said, we looked at three departments. Department of Social Development, it's got a number of centers that we looked at in the Eastern Cape, in the Free State, and in the Northern Cape. These are the specific centers we visited in those provinces, just to observe the facilities and speak to officials and understand how they were rendering the services related to the victim's charter, what kind of challenges they were experiencing, and what kind of progress and successes they were able to achieve. Under the Department of Health, we visited a number of crisis centers, TCCs, Tuzela Care Centers, Victim Empowerment Centers, and hospitals, just to also see relevant services rendered under the Department of Health. And the Department of Correctional Services, as I said, we visited those prisons which have parole boards. So we could speak, because the Department of Correctional Services also renders services in the sense of dealing with, in addition to dealing with the perpetrators, there are certain services to be rendered to the victims. Like, for instance, when there are parole hearings, there are rights that are related to the victims to attend or have a say. If a perpetrator is given parole, there are processes where the victims have a say. So we spoke to parole board in order to understand whether they were meeting the obligations in line with the victim's charter. These are just the focus areas. We wanted to look at the role of the department, because these are included in our previous recommendations. These key areas were covered in our previous recommendations on this department. The state of facilities, budget issues, skills development, monitoring and evaluation. So our findings relate to these areas in terms of whether the department did something to respond to our recommendations. So overview of the findings. This is in relation to the department, the first department, Department of Social Development. What we found was that the department had partially addressed some of our issues and recommendations raised in the previous reports, but we felt that there was still lack of clarity in terms of the relationship between the victim empowerment and victim's charter. There are these two programs are different, the victim's empowerment program and the victim's charter. But we found that within the DSD, there was lack of clarity in terms of the relationship between these two. They were treated as if they were the same thing, and they were not. And we felt that lack of clarity resulted in poor interdepartment, because some departments, like police, are involved in the victim's empowerment program. So there are issues of coordination that needs to be taken care of. And we find that lack of clarity resulted in poor interdepartmental coordination in the implementation of the victim's charter, especially after the Department of Justice abandoned its lead role in coordinating the victim's charter. So there was lack of an institutional leader or a departmental leader to ensure that kind of confusion doesn't occur. In addition, the DSD, which is responsible for the victim empowerment program, appeared to be placing the victim's charter under the VEP, while the two are separate. So,
what?
we found that the DSD, the Department of Social Development, under whose responsibility the Victim Empowerment Program falls, it was submitting the victim's charter under the Victim Empowerment Program, and they are supposed to be separate, but they were putting one under the other. What, if I could clarify, the Victim's Charter is a it's a program that should be implemented by all other departments, number of departments. The Victim Empowerment Program is under the DSD, but the DSD was placing the Victim's Charter, which is a broader program, placing it under its own Victim Empowerment Program. So that limited its scope. And that led to other departments not playing their role. Nonetheless, we found that the DSD continued to honor some of its obligations towards the Victim's Charter. So especially ensuring that their programs are aligned with the objectives of the Victim's Charter and its minimum standard. So in terms of its own area of responsibility, we found that the DSD was still committing resources and time and planning to honoring its own obligations to the Victim's Charter. They introduced legislative changes in line with the relevant CGE recommendations from the 2012 report that we did on the department. A draft bill on victim support services was introduced, which responds to the CGE's recommendation on ensuring that services offered to victims are provided by trained officials and that the shelters are monitored by the DSD. So this is one of our recommendations that we felt the DSD had met. And they also developed a system for capturing details of victims in order to enhance the tracking process, the tracing of victims. So they had developed a system. However, the DSD had not yet developed a proper funding model to ensure that shelters had the necessary resources to render adequate services to victims of crime. As a result, some shelters were closing down. Like, for instance, the Serobe shelter in the Free State closed down, while others, like the Itembeni Community and Trauma Center in the Northern Cape, had not received funding in the previous financial year. So that lack of a proper funding model created a situation where some shelters were closing down, others were taking time to receive their funding, their financial year for that particular financial year where we were studying. There was an lack of an effective funding model. It resulted in fragmented, inconsistent services and programs offered by different shelters in different provinces. In terms of the Victims Charter training, we also looked at training relevant to the Victims Charter, not just training, but training that is relevant to the Victims Charter. We found that the DSD shelters had made noticeable improvements since 2011. Although training provided to staff across the different shelters remained fragmented and inconsistent across different shelters and vulnerable to funding shortages. So in some cases, training differed across different provinces, and in some cases, training could not be offered due to lack of funding. So some areas progress was made in terms of training, in others training was undermined by lack of resources or funding shortages. And also improvement had been achieved in monitoring and evaluation of services rendered in line with the minimum standards for shelters. So there were some improvements in terms of monitoring the shelters. And that was done through regular audits conducted by the DSD, especially by victim empowerment coordinators. But as you can see, this was mainly confined to the victim empowerment program, where the improvements were made relating to monitoring and evaluation of services rendered. These were the findings in a nutshell for reviewing how the DSD had responded to some of our recommendations in the past. In terms of the work of the Department of Health, our review revealed that although the Department of Health continued to focus on developing policies and guidelines on the victim's part, it had not established a standardized, consistent, and reliable system for monitoring and evaluating the services provided by its centers. This was one of the recommendations that we put forward in the report we did on the department in 2012. And both the Department of Health and the NPA, the reason we are including the NPA is that they work in those TCC shelters. The shelters are under the control of the NPA, but the Department of Health plays a critical role there. We found that they had not conducted a thorough and independent review of the resources and funding model used to fund the TCCs, the Tukuzela Care Centers. This is, again, something we recommended in 2012. Therefore, a long-term sustainable funding strategy was not yet in place for TCCs. Many of them were struggling. We found that the budget allocation for TCCs was still inconsistent, with some facilities getting their necessary allocations while others continued to experience inadequate budgetary resources. And this had major consequences such as lack of human resources, limited supply, non-functioning equipment, etc., which rendered some of them ineffective. So there was also lack of trained personnel in some of the major, was one of the major constraints for some of the centers. And it affected services rendered to victims of crime. Many centers were either understaffed or lacked training for staff with forensic, especially. This was repeated finding we found that training for forensic medical support skills was limited, and this is critical. Just to digress a little bit, we found that the NPA in most, because the centers tend to run under the NPA, tend to pay attention mainly to paying rent and facilities and so on and so on. In terms of other broader resources, each department has to bring their own resources on the table, and the NPA does not play a role in that part, in that regard. So the NPA just ensures that the centers open and close.
Yeah.
In terms of the actual resources for services rendered, there's fragmentation. Each department has to take care of themselves. The Department of Health did provide continuous training for its facilities, especially in terms of management of victims of sexual assault, although no training for doctors and nurses in forensic medical skills. I said that that was limitation or limited training and resources to provide training for forensic medical support skills. And this led to inability to follow proper procedures in terms of collecting and storing or filing of forensic evidence vital for court cases involving victims of sexual offenses. In many TCCs that we looked at, in many TCs that we observed, site coordinators and voluntary staff, like counselors, were the ones available on site most of the time. That undermined effective delivery of services in line with the minimum standards for the victim status. So what it means is that some of the critical specialists were not always there at all times. Mm. Those that we found were mostly site coordinators and volunteer workers who are not specialized or specialist personnel. So victims of crime who might arrive at certain time might not meet get the skilled personnel to attend to their problems, because most of them were not available at all times. While they yes, this related to the Department of Health. So just to recap, this is the we were looking at how this department responded to some of our findings previously. So this was about the Department of Health. The Department of Correctional Services, we found that while it continued to develop policies and guidelines relevant to the implementation of the Victims' Charter, the facilities in the provinces, especially parole boards, continued to experience funding and resource constraint. The department had not yet taken on board the CGE's recommendation to review internal systems and policies for effective allocation and management of financial and other resources for the Victims Charter. The funding for Victims Charter related services remained a serious challenge for many parole boards. The funds were distributed disproportionately among DCS facilities in different provinces. So what it means is that some provinces like Gauteng did not experience funding challenges, while others, like Northwestern and KwaZulu-Natal, did. So I think some provinces were better resourced in terms of their facilities and others were not. And as we say, this was lack of a proper funding model by the department to ensure that allocation is done properly and those poorer provinces are prioritized. It did not happen. In terms of training, one of our recommendations related to skills development and training, we found that the needs of many parole board members remained largely unmet, with the exception of parole boards in Gauteng, where it appeared that relevant training was provided. So in some provinces, because of lack of resources, training was not provided. In others, like Gauteng, with better resources, training was provided. Once again, we felt that the Department of Correctional Services did not ensure that there was a funding framework that will eliminate those inconsistencies and inequalities. While the department appointed social auxiliary workers in some centers to assist with victims' tracing, the tracing of victims remained a challenge due to lack of effective information management system. So we did recommend an effective information management system previously because we found in our study previously that some of the victims were being lost by the department. The department is required to keep victims in a database so that if, for instance, if a perpetrator applies for parole, the parole board have to be able to trace the victims and inform them that there is an application for parole so that they could attend and make input. But we found that the department was losing some of these victims. They were disappearing from the system, and when we talked to the department, some department would say that victims have moved, they've relocated, they've changed places and so on and so on, but the department did not have the necessary capacity to trace them and relocate them and put their updated details into databases. So we found that exercise, that problem was still there, and in some cases, the parole board involves NGOs like Foundation for Victims of Crime to help them to trace victims. But in some provinces or in some regions, the NGOs did not participate. So some parole boards worked with NGOs, others didn't. So you had those discrepancies and inequality, sort of differences between different provinces, depending on whether they were able to enlist the support of NGOs or not. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, that's another key area that we had recommended, because it's important for services to be evaluated to see whether they are still relevant, whether they still meet the needs of the victims, and whether they need to be changed. And we found that in terms of monitoring the DCS facilities, that problem remained unattended to. at national and facility level. The CGE had recommended that the DCS introduces an effective system of regular reviews, monitoring and evaluation of the performance of its facilities with the wide scope to focus on the effectiveness and relevance of internal and external operations, systems, policies and practices. Instead, the department was still relying on compiling monthly reports and manual and unreliable collection of statistics by by DCS staff at correctional services centers at provincial level. We found that the department relied on this basic administrative collection of information by its staff. Many of them were not trained, they did not follow these processes consistently, and therefore the DCS could not rely on them. And in most cases, those administrative exercises were intended to collect information relating to complaints rather than effective monitoring and evaluation of the services rendered. It was more about collecting information relating to complaints. In conclusion, our overall assessment found that the selected department, the three departments that we looked at in this report, had addressed some of the issues raised by the CGE in our previous recommendations, while partially addressing or completely failing to address some of the other issues. As a result, some of the crucial challenges identified in the CGE's previous assessments continued to bedevil the work of implementing the Victims Charter by the various departments. While limited progress was noted in a few areas, issues such as limited budgets, resource allocations, the poor state of facilities, the failure to provide Victims Charter trainings and skills development to staff, and lack of effective monitoring and evaluation persisted in many of these centers. And importantly, it appears that the current efforts to implement the Victims Charter by the department are characterized by a lack of interdepartmental coordination. CGE is convinced that the central issue in this is that the lead department, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, discontinued its role as a leading and coordinating institution in the implementation of the Victims Charter across the justice, crime prevention, and crime prevention and security cluster. So we felt that the lead role of the Department of Justice was no longer there. No other institution played that role. That's why we named the report Chief Without a Captain. There were different six departments doing what was required in different ways, and the systemic issues that we noticed across were not being attended to because there's no department that took the lead for those issues to be addressed. Thanks.
Of the victims charter, yes. Although we don't have a charter that we have, I don't know whether they can provide us with a victim. in the charter. But if we can have it, maybe we can be able to ask the Department of Justice around the issue of the charter. And also the issue that as the portfolio committee, maybe on our next oversight, we should visit the Tutuola Center so that we can see exactly what is happening there. Because we have not yet given having a chance to visit the Tutuola Center and just to see the functioning of them. Because when we ask the police department, they don't know exactly, they don't even have a report about what is happening to mostly the police station. The issues of the private rooms for the victims. So that means that is why we're not even having this challenge only in the justice only, in court only, but also it started there from the police station. Because if they don't even send even the sensitivity of this issue of domestic violence in the police station, although it can also happen to the court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the report and the very extensively collected information. Chairperson, on page 31, on the overview of findings, it says the Department of Social Development has also developed a system for capturing details of victims in order to enhance the tracking process. Now, on page 37, it shows that the Department of Correctional Services, in some centers, they are finding it difficult to track these victims. Then it means there is no coordination or working together in this department, because correctional services should automatically be getting the information from the Department of Social Development.
But that happened. Why should they?
Yeah.
What happened to
the appointed social
My question is, what happened to the information that was taken at the time of recording in the police station?
Then it's clear. They're not trained. Continue.
It also says the Department of Correctional Services had appointed social auxiliary workers in some centers to assist with the victim.
Mm.
Then it means this department is not working. Having said that, there's also inconsistency in the provision of services to victims of this kind across the region. Surely the Department of Correctional Services, if I read the report, it just collects information from centers and gives that report, which is not accurate. So somebody is not doing his job here. And finally, I think I'd recommend that the CGE, if it can collect, if I see that some recommendations date back from 2012, it's either they are partially done or they are struggling to be done, these recommendations. If we can just get all these recommendations, collate them from 2012 up to date, and say this department, these were all the recommendations that were done, and this department has managed to do ABC up to today, and maybe take it from there, because otherwise going forward with this kind of reporting, like the first report which says covering the cracks or something like that, we are going backwards and forwards doing one and the same thing without achieving anything. You see, people who run a marathon, it's either you're running 100 meters or 200 meters, but there's some stop at some stage to say, no, I've done this. So, but with this, since these departments are not cooperating, because I say they're not cooperating with CGE, it means the work that we are doing is not is not going to show any progress at the end of the 5 years, that you are in this parliament. So I don't know, Chairperson. But I think something needs to be done very drastically. It goes back to this kind of leadership. Somehow, there's no leadership to give guidelines in this whole thing. Because this was leadership, and there were plans, national plans. We should be saying we have achieved this, and now we're left with this. I think it still goes back to this kind of summit that is needed by all institutions, so that they can be shown that these were the recommendations all these years, but up to this one, maybe we've done from all maybe 20 recommendations, maybe two or three have been achieved. We've shown that that is not fair for the amount of money that is being put into budget year after year, and then we achieve so little. So I think the summit maybe will help us as a way forward. Thank you. So,
thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to clarify on that issue of the tracking. Because of a lot of mobility in the country, migration and all, the department to try to address the issue that Honorable Member is raising of departments not talking to each other. The correctional services, they said that they appointed an organization called FOVOC. Yes, FOVOC to track the victims from at all corners of South Africa if they are still in the country, so that they can be located to be part of the criminal justice proceedings for the paroles of their perpetrators. Just wanted to make that clarity that it's not like they are not talking to each other. They record, they have a form that they use for all those details. But mostly when the community integration section of the correctional services visit the community to try and trace the victims. The victims have migrated or they are no longer staying there. So that is how FOVOC was brought into that part of, as they are part of their expertise to track them everywhere they are, if they are still in the country and if not. Thank you.
Where is the report of that? What FOVOC?
There were challenges still on that, because FOVOC did not have resources. That was one of the issues that were raised. And if the report is there, it should be with the Department of Correctional Services, because their contract ended, I think, 2015, if not 16, but their contract ended.
Honorable Chair, could I just add to that?
Yeah.
I think the major issue of it, DAK thing, is correct in the sense that in those areas where the department is unable to trace victims because it didn't have the resources on the ground, they relied on NGOs. NGOs tended to have the knowledge of what's going on the ground. But the problem is those NGOs, many of them, including FOVOC is basically, it's an organization called Foundation for Victims of Crime. In some cases, they didn't have the resources to do that. And secondly, that arrangement between the correctional services and FOVO existed in some provinces, not in other provinces. So you find the inconsistencies. In some cases where that arrangement exists, the NGO is able to help conditional on the fact that they had the resources. In some cases, they didn't have the resources, that they couldn't help. In others, the parole board did not have or did not try to make that partnership. So that was left unattended. So those are the inconsistencies we said needed a lead institution. If the Department of Justice was there, coordinating at national level, they would be able to see where there are differences and inconsistencies, and they should be able to step in and see how to address some of these inconsistencies. So because of lack of that lead structure, things were happening differently in different provinces, so which meant that the rights of victims were being met in some provinces and not in other provinces, or somewhere they were met partially. So the system was inconsistent and inequitable across the different parts of the country.
No, my concern is there was a system of taking me as the perpetrator to that particular area, and then my family and the victim's family, the community, they all together, and the decision of whether that person comes out on parole or not is discussed there and there, you know. And then there is this reconciliation between the victim's family and the perpetrator. And that way, when he comes out of jail, he is being met by the same people from the community. And then he says it's an open apology. And then there's close monitoring of the person. So even if the victim's family has moved to another place, the community are able to say they are at one, and you know, that sort of thing. But because I must choose my words here. Things change within a week of an eye, and the communities are not drawn into that. It's just the knowledge for certain people. This is a serious crime, but people are taking it very.
Thank you, Chair. In addition to what you've just said, I actually wanted to say it becomes very strange from government departments. They always talk about the problem, like Department of Correctional Services.
Mm-hmm.
Government has got centers all over. We've got municipalities, we've got traditional leaders, we've got councillors, we've got these communities. There is no way that people can just disappear and not be known. You definitely are known if you come from a particular community. Even if you leave, your family will know that you've got a certain place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've gone to Cape Town, they will know which area. There are wards in the whole of the country. Those structures are meant for people to be able to be traceable. I mean, shops are able to trace people. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it easier for shops? Because they will make sure that you pay their account wherever you are. Now, if shops without the structures of government are able to trace people, why is it becoming so difficult for departments to be in a position to trace the victims? Something is not just beginning. I just wanted to say that there is no way human beings can just get one and say, no, it's difficult to ensure from the fact that there are government structures right there, up to council, up to traditional leaders, where the victim or the perpetrator is from. Thank you, Chair.
You should let the CGE do the last report, yes, take question and answer, then they after lunch at lunch building, and we can finish the meeting. But we can arrange it for maybe later than 1 o'clock when we finish the meeting. Thank you.
Let's continue. failing the people. But I can't put the finger on one.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. This is our last report. This is the only report that was in the last financial year, 2016. So the other two were from 2015. But it's also the victim's charter. So it follows on from the second report that we just presented. As I said, the first report was on three departments of the three out of the six. So this one is on the last three departments: Department of Justice, the SAPS, and the NPA. It looks at their responsibilities in terms of the victims' charter and how they responded to our to our previous recommendations. Just to note the last small point there, as we said earlier. These two reports, as members would notice, do not have recommendations, because this is about how department responded to our previous recommendations. So we didn't make further recommendations, we just made conclusions as to our findings. Yes, as I just said, these are the last set of three departments that we dealt with from going back to the previous department, which had three departments. So this is the total of six departments now that we covered in terms of assessing progress on our previous recommendations. I'm going to skip the objectives because they are the same as the previous report and the methodology. These are the centers that we visited again under the SAPS. We looked at police stations, because police stations also render services related to victims' charter. We visited police stations in KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and Northern Cape. Various police stations that the CGE research team visited and spoke to station commissioners and cluster commanders and people who are responsible in leadership positions. Under the Department of Justice, we visited quite a number of magistrates, regional magistrate courts in KwaZulu-Natal, in Gauteng, in Limpopo. So we visited various courts, because the courts, magistrate courts, are also responsible for certain victim charter related responsibilities and functions. Under the NPA, as we said earlier, the NPA is responsible for the running of Thuthuzela care centers. So we visited a number of Thuthuzela care centers under the NPA. Out of this, just one point that we'd like the members to note. The Department of Justice refused to speak to us at national level. Although we did speak to magistrates and officials, court officials at regional level. We want, as I said, the Department of Justice was the lead institution. We needed their input. And at national level, they absolutely refused to talk to us. At one stage, we had a meeting with them, which was fairly confrontational. But we were unable to speak to anyone in terms of their input and insight. And these are the same focus areas we looked at as in the previous report. Issues like state of facilities, budget, skills development, and so on and so on. And this is what we found in terms of the Department of Justice. We found that, sorry, members will forgive me, there's a technical problem we are experiencing here. The computer is skipping slide number 47. But the slide is there in the printed copy of the presentation.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we've been struggling since the morning. The computer is keeping slide number 47. In our assessment of the implementation of the Wikileaks, it became clear that the Department of Justice, I've already mentioned it, that they abandoned their role of national strategic leadership and coordinator of the activities and responsibilities of the cluster of six departments that are responsible for this. It was clear that the Department of Justice was no longer playing that role. However, many of these, many of the court, still in slide number 47, the findings reveal that the department was taking important steps. That we are talking about the Department of Justice. It was taking important steps that address some of the key findings and recommendations that we made in our previous report. For instance, the department re-established the sexual offences courts to address the victims' special needs and to reduce or eliminate secondary traumatization of the victims. And they have also made improvements in terms of case management, the cycle times and the outcomes of cases. We found that there have been improvements in those areas, and those areas were part of the recommendations that we made. However, many of the courts were not, of the sexual offences courts, we found that many of them were not compliant in some of the key aspects contained in the department's guidelines in terms of the establishment of the court. Like, for instance, these courts are supposed to have closed circuit television equipment, CCTVs. We found that some of these CCTV equipment were faulty, and one of the guidelines was also for courts to have what's called anatomically detailed dolls. These are dolls that are either male or female dolls that could be used for illustration purposes in a court case. Like, for instance, for children, they would have to use the dolls to illustrate certain activities and what happened. So those dolls are critical. We found that some of the courts did not have those dolls as required under the guidelines of the department or even part of the victim's charter requirement. And there were we found lack of training and skill development on the victim's charter among some of the court officials. So basically, some of the court officials did not have knowledge and training in the victim's charter, and that's critical. Only one court, the Umlaas Regional Court, Magistrate Court, had in the financial years 2014-15 and 2015-16, it had taken officials through substantive training on the charter, on the victim's charter. So generally, training was still lacking amongst court officials. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, we still found lack of progress in response to our findings. The courts continued to rely on basic or elementary methods, such as suggestion boxes. We found those are limited and fairly simple and unreliable, because suggestion boxes mean whoever bothered to make a suggestion could do that. Most people did not bother to do that. The Department of Justice, however, appeared largely committed to its responsibilities towards implementing the victim's charter through its annual program. So their program did display commitment towards victim's charter related functions. All we are saying is that they left their role as a lead institution to focus on their own sectoral programs and responsibilities. So that vacuum was created in terms of a national lead institution and coordinator of the process. That was the Department of Justice. In terms of the South African Police Services, we found that the service did manage to develop the necessary policies, standards, and guidelines to ensure alignment of its programs and services with the victim's charter. And we found that, as in our report in 2009, that the resources were distributed disproportionately amongst stations. the victims, once an important aspect of the victims charter is the establishment of victims, victim-friendly rooms. And the victim-friendly rooms, especially at police stations based in affluent areas, seemed well-equipped compared to those in rural areas or township areas. So we found that discrepancy. The victims-friendly rooms in the urban areas were better equipped compared to those in rural areas. And the allocation of the creation of FCS units, the Family Violence, Crime Prevention and Sexual Offences units, was also, the establishment was also inconsistent. Some units, for instance, were on the same side, in the premises of the police station, while others were located somewhere else, away in other centers, like one-stop centers, rather than at the police station. And the one-stop center system proved to be problematic, as in many cases, units based in these centers were severely understaffed and inadequately resourced. Let me just give an example. Let's say in a one-stop center, there would be a FCS unit where different departments are supposed to be contributing. Many departments would refuse to allocate resources, but in the case of the SAPS, where the unit was established in their police station, they would give resources. But in a one-stop center where sharing needs to happen or different departments need to contribute, some would hold back and others would. So you'll find those inconsistencies and discrepancies happening. So the friendly rooms, as I said, especially in police stations based in urban areas, seem better resourced. So the lack of appropriate equipment like cars also affected the FCSs as one of the persisting challenges. And the CGE indicates that, the assessment indicates that all the six police stations that we looked at in the three provinces did provide training for members of the visible policing unit on the victim's chart. I think our Commissioner Sobhase did mention earlier on that the SAPS sometimes does provide training, but it doesn't seem to be effective. So we did find that they were, in some police stations, training was provided, especially to members of the visible policing unit of the SAPS on the victim's charter. And we felt that this was at least a response to one of our previous findings. And I think honorable committee members were there, in the meeting last week in the policing committee, the issue of the SAPS members did say that they provided training, but in some cases the training was limited, 5 days, so on and so on. It was short. It should be, but it wasn't. So they do spend a lot of money on training, but the training is inconsistent, unsustainable, and very limited. So it doesn't show results and improvement. In terms of monitoring, the SAPS also relied on the same as the Department of Justice, on administrative collection of information, including suggestion boxes, which we felt were ineffective and unreliable. That was the SAPS in a nutshell in terms of their responses to some of the issues we raised previously. In terms of the NPA, we found inconsistency or lack of uniformity among TCCs in terms of services rendered to victims of crime. Questions regarding national coordination and oversight of service delivery became prominent. So basically, what we found also is that the NPA, which is supposed to be responsible for victims, they confined their responsibility only to the practical operations of the centers, opening and making sure that there's security, they close on time, there are premises and rent is paid. In terms of the quality of services, the resources and so on, the NPA suffered the same problem that we saw with the Department of Social Development. other department refused to listen to the NPA. They refused to cooperate with the NPA. So within the TCCs, even though the TCCs were supposed to be a center where government brings different services from health, from Department of Social Development, from South African Police under one roof, there was lack of unity of purpose. Each department was doing its own thing, and the NPA, instead of trying to bring together coordination, the NPA vacated that space and confined itself to just making sure that the centers are running and rent is paid and so on and so on. So inconsistencies in the rendering of services became a problem. In some places you find that one department is missing, SAPS is not there, only Department of Social Development and Health. In others, so different inconsistent participation of the different departments became an issue in different sense, because there's no coordinating structure to ensure that there's uniform approach across the different centers. So as a result, there was significant fragmentation or lack of unity of purpose, as I've just said, among the key agencies within the TCCs. Officials from other departments were reluctant or resistant to being overseen by the NPA officials within the TCC. This resulted in a great deal of inconsistency in the availability and provision of services across various TCCs in different provinces. There was no standardized, effective monitoring and evaluation system in place for the NPA to gauge the regularity, on a regular basis, the quality and level of victims' charter-related services. The different TCCs use different methods. For instance, suggestion boxes, complaint boxes, customer satisfaction surveys, toll-free numbers. So different departments use different methods to try to monitor services being rendered. But we found that in many cases, these methods were basically voluntary method. That's where somebody volunteers to lay a complaint. If you don't lay a complaint, it won't be registered. If you don't put a suggestion in a suggestion box, they won't know. Mm-hmm. So these were methods meant on the willingness of the individuals to say something. And in most cases, ordinary individuals are intimidated by the system. Some of them are, as soon as they leave the center, they never want to go back or write letters to. And in most cases, people who write letters and suggestions tend to be very educated people, or those who are really offended, who feel that they need to say something. So the majority of people keep quiet even when they encounter injustices and so on and so on. Most people keep quiet. And the NPA and other departments responsible for the victims' charter within the TCC failed to develop a common service delivery and funding framework to standardize services provided across all the facilities in line with the minimum standard in the victims' charter. So this is the end. In a nutshell, these are some of the things we found as we assessed how the department responded to our recommendations in the past. So in conclusion, our overall assessment revealed that the three departments that I've just reported on, they had addressed some of the key issues raised in our previous report, although not all issues were addressed adequately, and other issues were not attended to at all. While limited progress was noted in a few areas, issues such as limited budgets, resource allocation, the poor state of facilities, failure to provide victims charter training and skills development to staff, and lack of effective monitoring and evaluation system persist as areas that should be addressed by policymakers. Thanks. That's the end of the FEC report.
What will happen when the traditional leaders take over these areas? Most of them are not educated. They won't understand the problem.
Traditional
so traditional courts bill is because we are trying to force. It's been going on. We've pushed it out 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, we're not against the traditional leaders per se. But they haven't been trained up to now. How are they going to deal with that? I am standing in my husband died, and they want to take over. They want to take over those, whatever I have, the land. Okay? They want to take over the land. I'm not even supposed to defend myself because I'm a woman. Then they point out some dowdy so-and-so to stand in for me. There is no justice. If you're a woman, you are... It's evident like that. And when the magistrates' commission was discussing that, the big people in the police force were totally against it. Because most of our sisters can't even defend them. Umatata is very soft. Any input, members?
I'm saying that's the recommendation. I'm not on that particular thing of amalgamating women rights. I don't support one single women rights body. I'm saying let's discuss the issue of recommendations by Chapter 9 institutions binding. Because otherwise we're going to just round in circles over every day in the end. And on the other side, we are using the budget of government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on the other side, we are saying we don't have enough funds, don't have enough money in this country. So otherwise, we are going nowhere. You know, and it came to that in all these departments, we've got this, you know, laissez faire attitude. No one wants to listen to anybody. Officials in the department don't want to listen to Chapter 9 institutions. And all these sister departments, you can't listen to GSD, you can't listen to DPM. So who do you want to listen to? Unless there's political wheelchair, minister in the department is ready to take her or his department ready, then I think we can see the changes in all these departments. But if there's no political will, unfortunately, change will be. In parliament for 5 years, go home after this, after that, without making any positive impact to the people who have voted for us to come to this parliament.
The Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, the department that is in the, I would say, in the right direction, that they must be able to monitor and evaluate each and every department. But the problem is that we don't see the work of those of the department doing its job, because when the ministers find that the ministers are not in a working relationship with their officials themselves, and it's going to escalate down to the officials, the provincial, from national to the provincial level, down to the municipal level. So if the people that don't even want to speak on the issues that they are paid for, then anyway, what are we going to do? Because in Parliament, you find that the ministers have said it, they're taking the reports to the cabinet, as if those people in the cabinet should not be taken into task, you know. They are not even complying, no one is complying. So that is why we always have a problem as members of Parliament to take those ministers to account. But I don't know why, because all the systems are there. That is why we have Chapter 9 institutions to look at what the departments are doing. But if the political will is not there, then what are we going to do? There is nothing we can do except to say that people are using funds. Government funds. They are being paid a huge salary, but at the end of the day, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So that means we can't do anything except to say, I fully agree with Honorable Second, that we must advocate that the Chapter 9 institutions should be binding, all the institutions should be binding, so that people, if they don't want to do their work, must be taken to task, or else they must be removed from their official positions, especially on the issue of this youth department of women. You know, now we are now left with maybe 80 months, but still we don't have the CFO, we don't have CFO. The only thing that the department must do to get a right CFO. So anyway, we can't do anything. The money is there, it's gone, 100% of it, but anyway, all the issues that are not even implemented. People are getting huge salaries. And even the department is not taking serious its own entity, because we have found that some other departments have got 7, 8 entities, but this department has got only one entity, but it fails to work together with this entity. So I don't know what we are supposed to do, but I think maybe because we are going for policy conferences, we can change these things there, so that you can be able to do so, else to come out with other things that we should do, except to say that these ministers that we have are not doing well. Thank you.
I just a simple comment here. Honorable Bengo, I think Parliament has given us powers either to appropriate money or withhold money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or withhold money to a certain. That's the powers that we have. The money bills. What is that?
Yeah.
Bills. Money bills. Money bills.
Appropriation.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Money bills. Money bills.
Appropriation.
It gives us, you know, powers either to give them or to withhold.
So we can
actually motivate.
Pull back.
We can
make a budget.
When I was given this report that frustrates us for 5 years in Parliament, and then we have to implement that. No problem with this.
Sorry, but the problem is that the more we hold, we use our power, the people that are going to suffer is the entity that is decision. If you need to spend like holy money, there are they will not get the money, and
you withhold a certain program.
Yes.
If you don't want, maybe in program 3, they are not performing in program 3.
Mm-hmm.
Withhold that thing.
CGE is a trend that keeps observing. Lack of coordination by these departments.
Yes.
If departments don't work together, why should they the government continue to have these departments? Maybe another strategy I do not know. But I'm just posing a question, what happens with these departments that refuse to coordinate?
For them, it's fine. Use your power.
And you have power.
Yes. Follow now. It's supposed to come and complain. Why public prosecutors do not matter with the number of? Why are they afraid of the matter? But now they want to undermine the system. So be like truly. Use the power that you have.
And the last one, Chair, just to make you happy. In East London, outside villages, there's a woman who was refused to bury her husband.
Yes.
The community boycotted the funeral.
Mm.
There was no digging of the grave, and there was no cooking by the community.
But what happened to the corpse? It remained in the mortuary.
Women's power.
Did they give the reason for refusal?
It's still being discussed by the family. They said it was a family matter.
This tale.
No. It's an old man that had married a younger woman. So I'm not sure whether he had a wife.
Because they have no rights.
to take a statement from an underage child,
and then the aunt is receiving, and yet she doesn't get in anywhere. The mother in law is saying, no, this is the wife of my son. Why can't she be
I want to take the opportunity that you provided us to present our report. But I hope that going forward you could present other reports in different areas that we have been. And what we feel that it's, at least it will now have some direction. Because we continue to develop reports on what is happening in the country, but no relevant department takes the process forward. Secondly, I'm not sure, Chair, just browsing this report by DME, what are they going to do? Because to me, it seems that it was a waste of funds by the department. This is a desktop research about what is happening really around gender-based violence in the country. We just collected the studies from different people that have done their own research and collected and presented. It's not a real study on the practical thing. And also they do have come to us, we share the real report with them and take the process forward, maybe a leg further to what we've done. But even if you look on their reference, a reference to 2009 in some areas, 2009 studies, the very disappointing that this department, and it's also done by KPMG, so that they always know fully when
there's nothing new.
Yes, can I just get some guidance from the committee as well as the CGE? Going through all the report and key stakeholders that we look to plan for end of August, probably even September, if we need to pull everyone together. Is there anyone I've missed out? It will be Justice, Department of Justice, NPA, Correctional Services, Social Development, SAPS, Health, with SAPS as we civilian secretariat because they replaced the old IFED. Basic Education, Home Affairs, DPME, SAPS SA, because SAPS SA is around Department of Women, and SAPS was telling us they involved also in issues around basic education. Department of Women, I've included Home Affairs. Submission for Gender Equality.
Health is
there. I also think maybe the South African Human Rights Commission, because they've also done a study which was referred to us around matters around farm workers and living conditions and violence, and then the Office of the Deputy President. Is there any other department, I'll go through the list again, of what we didn't include. So the Security Cluster, Justice, NPA,
Justice and Constitutional
and NPA, SAPS, Civilian Secretariat, Correctional Services, Social Development, Health, Basic Education, Home Affairs, DPME, SAPS SA, Department of Women, CGE, Human Rights Commission, and the Office of the Deputy
President.
Is there anybody else?
Those are national departments. I was just thinking of safety and license, provincial
but does monitoring, oversight, oversight serve the provincial level? Just wondering if it's not relevant, because it does monitoring of these people's benefits and so on.
But are they doing it in all provincial? It's my concern, because we want an in-depth report.
So now, issues of higher education because of the violence against women and race, that would be higher education.
Yeah.
The issue of homophobia is around ID numbers and tracing. Earlier on, there was a question around correctional services and parole board. If I take some of our members back to the appointment of the commissioner for Commission for Gender Equality, the issue of screening and vetting came up. And that's where we needed to engage with Home Affairs, State Security Agency, and SAPS. Because it was around how do you identify if a person who really is, who they are, and where would you trace that person. So that's why we have Home Affairs, because it's about the person's ID. And all these matters actually relate to databases and persons. So Home Affairs does have a role to play. How do we coordinate information of people in relation to matters related to gender-based violence?
Thank you very much for all the work you've done. If I was to do it, you want to talk? Okay, talk.
Just as part of our major program, the committee has slightly spoken to the issue of data. It's another problem that we do not have. We struggle to get gender-based violence and violence against women data as it is. And we are thinking that the sooner we see or we get to know which is the correct department to host that kind of data or to coordinate it so that all the data from the roots from every source gets to be feeding into the national statistics so that we know where we are as a country the statistics of gender-based violence statistics. I think that is our major problem that we can really be happy to be assisted about, because last year there was a multi-stakeholder engagement that was led by MRC, Medical Research Council. They are doing a lot of work on gender-based violence. And they had a study called surveillance something. So they were looking into different sectors that are collecting data. So the last time that we attended the meeting, we heard about the meeting. They were debating about which is the relevant department to get that, to collect that data and coordinate it, because then it will assist us as we are trying to get the national strategic plan to plan, knowing where we stand as a country, because as we speak now, even at the police station, considering our challenges, the gender-based violence victims, they are reported, it will appear, say, as assault. If the husband killed the woman, it will be under murder. It will not. But we listened to the presentation about, I heard the presentation by the current Minister of Police, who said that one of their objectives is to make gender-based violence as the standalone crime category. So that will help. So basically, us as researchers, we really be pleased to be assisted with earmarking of the structure that will coordinate the national gender-based violence and the violence against women data.
I would recommend that you talk to STEPS about they cover all sectors.
I don't know whether the committee will correct me if I can say that we need to have a meeting, maybe when you come back from the research, a meeting with the minister, the minister and the department, as well as the CGE on this report, just to have a closed meeting so that we can deal with this report together with the minister and the department. No, we can have a summit, but I think we need to talk as this entity with CGE and with any department. Basically, before we go to the summit, so that you can have the response from the community around these issues. Especially because the Department of Police should be the department that is leading.
Being again for what I'm trying to think, what do we think maybe will achieve this for the pattern of the conversation? Colleges and this recommendation has been there, and some of them have not been attended to. So I'm trying to think of the time frame. Will we benefit anything for the challenge rather than it must be part of the summit?
Thank you.
update on the program. We've submitted the ELO grant. It's full right up until the last week, if I recall, Melissa.
Mm.
So practically, there's oversight for the first week when we come back. We do first quarter reports, department first quarter reports, CGE, two other referral of your reports from the department. I think there was one other program at it. Yeah, so just in terms of time change. But maybe if we can look at the program again.
As Kashima has said, in terms of the parliamentary program also, there will be no time for a specific meeting with the department, unless what we can do, the first week we've allocated it for the government people to visit the national dialogues of the department, but then I will check if they are going to have national dialogues, just to, for us to go and see if they are. But I will email the program because you have to, you know, to submit it on the 20th. I don't know, I have to check with them where they're going to get it. Yeah. That's their program, it's funded, so we have to.
Thanks very much, and there's something for the tummy.
You can enjoy.
Yeah, I also don't think.
I wash. I feel like I need. Anytime. I'm not going to be able to. 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 I'